Welcome to the Michelle Mission, Two Men, One Podcast. Every black film ever made. My name is Len, a.k.a. the Bat Tribble. And as always, I'm joined by my partner.
Hey, this is Vincent Williams.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, if you are watching us during the live stream, we've got a very special show.
We do.
For you this evening. That is right, ladies and gentlemen, as we are going to be reviewing Origin from Ava DuVernay and starring Anjanae Ellis-Taylor, new film that came out, I think, late 2023 or early 2024. But a very fascinating film that we are going to be reviewing for you tonight. And we have two very special returning guests to the mission to help us review it tonight, ladies and gentlemen. They're returning to the Michelle Mission, but this is their first time on YouTube.
Yes, yes. On camera.
As they discovered when they walked into the studio.
We need lipstick. We need some things, yes.
This ain't the kitchen. Where we at? it's a whole new day, ladies and gentlemen. Unless I mispronounce their names, because they have... You'll see why in a second. I'm going to let our lovely friends here of the mission introduce themselves, starting with the young lady next to Vincent over there.
Hi, Vincent.
Hi.
My name's Denise. And I like movies.
Okay. Well, you're in the right place.
That's like being in one of those meetings. My name's Denise, and I'm a film watcher.
Okay.
Was there more I was supposed to say?
Not if you don't want
to. As much or as little as you want.
Oh, well, Philadelphia's home now. We home now. I've been in Philly for 30-some years, and I've been in journalism for a long time. Mm-hmm. Now I don't teach about film. Teach journalism as well. And I love that we got invited back for a second time to be on the Michelle Mission. And I'm serious when I say that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And now you.
I am also Denise. Denise with an A. And I have known this Denise for quite some time. And it's been a wild ride. We teach students together. We teach visual communication and photography and video and how to do storytelling. And so this Denise... we've been rocking for a while. Yes. And so it's she's the friend that I can call and be like, you know, I got a crazy idea. She's like, say more. So she's that friend. And true. So we talk about movies all the time. Yes. And we recite lines all the time. Yes. So it is exciting for us to be back here because we get to talk about movies.
Yes.
Well, we're very excited.
Yes,
to have
you're
you
certainly
back.
In the right place.
Yes. And it's been a long time coming. Just between you and me, Denise. Trying to get this one back here for a minute.
I know it.
And it's like, you have to come back because Denise has to select her movie. She's like, she don't need to select nothing. I say when we coming back.
I'm like, that's what you sound like in his head.
Right. I don't know who that is. I don't know him either. I'm sorry, wrong movie.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be like this all night, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. I promise you. We'll get serious when it's time to talk about Origin. But until then. We're going to have a good time for each and every one of you out there who are watching us as we are streaming live from Yunk Junk, Philadelphia's premier video podcast palace here in Manayunk, to all points north, south, east, and west on Facebook, on Twitter, as well as on YouTube, where all of the missionaries are out there in the chat. Hello, missionaries.
Good evening, one and all.
All right.
I like that, missionaries.
I know.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Y'all not colonizing people, are you? I'm sorry.
She's already started.
Colonizing.
Well, when I hear missionaries.
Sharing our thoughts and beliefs and convincing people to follow our ways. in exchange for our tax-free status and signing of their property. Oftentimes, we give them suggestions on what to name their children.
But we wouldn't call that colonize.
Such an ugly word.
Sorry.
Anyway, We're going to get right into it, ladies and gentlemen, because it's a little thick. You're in time to check out all of the features that we do here. Yeah, because it's been a while since you've been on the show.
It's been a long time.
It's a whole new show.
It's a whole new show, set, yes. Everything.
All right. We are going to start things from hearing from you, ladies and gentlemen, your emails, or as we like to call them,
missives from the missionaries.
So what else is going on, Lynn?
We have emails, Vincent.
Ooh, missives from the missionaries.
Missives from the missionaries, ladies and gentlemen. Number one, Vincent, we have an email from Belinda Silber.
Hey, what's up, Belinda?
Subject line is recovery.
Okay.
Hello, guys. I was a very big fan of Jonathan Majors' work.
Yeah.
First time I saw him was The Last Black Man in San Francisco, which was our introduction to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think there is any way that he can recover his career? It worked for Robert Downey Jr. Do you think it would work for Jonathan? Thank you, Belinda. That's an interesting email. Mm-hmm. And especially interesting, too, because of, you know, just because we're all movie lovers. Mm-hmm. But we're all, especially Denise and Dunnies, have backgrounds in journalism of a sort. Yeah. So what do you think about his chances on doing a recovery of his career? Well, do you think his career is lost totally?
I don't think it's not necessarily lost. I think if he doesn't do things that continue to feed the news cycle and give it some time, he may be able to work his way back into doing some work. Will he be the superstar? It looked like he was on the way to being. That I have a different answer for that. I don't think that would be as easy, but you know, you can never say it's not possible.
That's true.
You know, Wesley Snipes has gotten a few more films, but he never got back to where he was, and his was about money. And since this is dealing with a whole different issue that's a lot more sensitive, I think he's got a hill to climb.
Yeah. Well, Wesley, I think what hurt Wesley also was that at the time in his career when he took his downfall, he had already, maybe not apex, but he had been at a certain high. So that means it's such more a precipitous fall.
Yeah.
And thus even higher to climb up for. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's just going to be a slow burn. It's going to, you know, it's going to be like crock pot kind of burn. It's going to take a while, and it's going to take a really smart team to reframe who he is and what he has to offer. But he's going to look different when he comes back. You know, like he looked swole up and plump and juicy, had roses thrown on him and all this stuff. He was just escalating really quickly and it all stopped. And so I think he will have aged. I think he will have matured. Mm-hmm. If he can make that transition, I think it's going to take some humility on his part. But it's going to be a slow, slow burn.
And he better choose his relationships carefully and
careful
and be whatever he needs to be in a healthy way in relationships.
I wonder if they're on their lunch break at the Piggly Wiggly. We should probably call and see what Nate Parker and Isaiah Washington think about this subject.
Oh my gosh. Mm. I mean, that's a good point. But and neither of them had reached the heights that Jonathan Majors was reaching. Yeah. But you got, you bring up a good point because in my mind,
because she mentioned Robert Downey Jr., but you know, first of all, he's Robert Downey Jr. And if you know about his lineage, you know the family he comes from. Yeah. And I don't know how to put this delicately. He's white.
He is. You're right.
Is there a reason you have to say someone's white delicately?
I mean, you know, because it's like, oh, well, Robert Downey Jr. had a comeback. And even him, all jokes aside, that took how many years?
He took a long time.
Famously, they had Terrence Howard with him on Iron Man because they were hedging their bets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Terrence Howard was like the big
right. Game. He was the safe, stable actor in the first Iron Man.
Yeah. Right,
and then they kind of, you know, he kind of went from there. But
I wonder how much of a difference it makes thinking about Robert Downey Jr., as far as I remember, most of his problems had to deal with his addiction.
Yes.
To drugs. Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, like these self-inflicted wounds that he was doing upon himself that he had to fight to come back, because he famously had come back for a minute because he became like a star on Ally McBeal for a minute and then took another fall.
Right.
So the difference, and even with Wesley Snipes, it was like you said, it was money. It was taxes. His taxes. This is against women.
Yeah.
You know, it puts a different spin on it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think addiction back in those days was looked at differently. Today it's looked at as a disease.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's all kinds of help and program and whatnot, rightly so. But back in those days, you know, addiction was dirty and nobody talked about it. We hid Uncle Joey behind the counter, right? Like it was very much hidden. And now it's like you can live with addiction and thrive, you know, during and after, you know.
And not be judged the exact same way.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
I hope he makes it back, because I do think he's a pretty amazing actor.
I'm still a fan of his work, you know. Like, his personal life doesn't retroactively affect his performance in something like The Last Man, Black Man in San Francisco.
Nah.
Which, you know, as we talked about when it came out, was an extraordinary debut.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a hard question, though, sometimes, because, like, I think about karaoke.
Okay.
Okay.
I like karaoke.
Okay.
I can't sing, I love to sing.
The Lord knows your heart.
And a person I know who does the karaoke, who, you know, the KJ, does not play R. Kelly.
Sure.
So, and you know, he wrote some amazing and sang some amazing music, but won't do it retroactively either.
Mm-hmm.
And so that becomes a hard thing sometimes, because Michael Jackson wasn't convicted. So that's my way to say, okay, we can play some Michael Jackson.
Right.
But that's a tough one.
See, R. Kelly is hard, though, because so much of his art
was wrapped up
intersects with what he did. Like, I talked to my own students about, you know, something like the cover of Aaliyah's debut album.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's called Age Ain't Nothing But a Number. And then he's standing in the background in the shadows.
Right. And she's a baby.
Right. You know, he calls himself the Pied Piper. It's like, do you know what the Pied Piper did? Like, he kidnapped kids. So it gets a little bit more difficult.
True.
But look, who is it? Pearl Cleage? Pearl Cleage wrote Mad at Miles what year? 1980, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I still listen to Miles Davis. So I don't know. I'm very careful about that because I know
it's difficult.
You know, it's like your conviction only goes as far as who you like.
Well, and your own experience, right?
And your own experience.
If you've had this as a personal experience, your origin story, you like how I weaved an origin in there. if you have this in your origin story, you know, you may feel strong, right? Extremely strong. And there is no leeway there. Yep. Right. And so I think it's based on experience as well.
All right. Thank you, Belinda, for that email.
Yeah, thanks, Belinda.
Yeah, Belinda. That's good.
We got another email, Vincent, from Corey P.
What's up, Corey?
The coffee versus Claudine debate. Hi, Len and Vince. Happy March and Women's History Month. I watch Black women-led films to celebrate the month of March. Before I get into the initial post, it is still mind-boggling to me that you guys have not covered both Waiting to Exhale or Foxy Brown since Foxy Brown turns 50 this year. Well, the year's not over, Corey.
Oh, no. Dog, it's March.
I could have sworn you guys covered those. No.
No, we didn't.
I remember how both of you were conversing about Black women representation in the 70s by comparing the movies Coffee and Claudine. The question was complex to me because it can be viewed from different perspectives. While the initial and ideal answer from the two was Claudine, I do think Coffee and Claudine go neck and neck. Claudine was the best choice because it represented working class Black women and showcasing a possible two-parent household between Rupert and Claudine. Coffee also showed that Black women can be a voice for their community and loved ones by doing what is right, which in this case was eliminating drugs out of the community and all of the black men dealing them. Think the black...
Did you add that part?
Yes, I did. Think of the Black Panther Party and the black women involved serving their communities. It was a thought-provoking conversation nonetheless. Thank you, Corey, for that email. You know, we talked about it a little bit. To that debate about the depiction of black women in the 70s with Coffee and Claudine, I think you would have to add, now having seen it, Sounder and the way that Cecily Tyson comes off in that film is just this strong matriarch who doesn't give in to anything. Like, her husband is taken away to jail and she's like, all right. We got to keep the farm going.
Yeah, black women been tired for a while.
Yeah. Well, you know, I forget the specifics of the debate, but you know, I'm a huge proponent of Coffee. And it's funny because there's a moment in Claudine where, you know, one of the several times that Rupert ghosts her, and she's in the apartment by herself, and she's sort of, you know, kind of dancing, and you see it all on her face. And, you know, I love the extraordinary end of Coffee when she's on the beach and you can see the adrenaline kind of drains out of her and she's just very vulnerable. And I see both of them kind of parallel in a weird way so that, you know, I think they work together really well. And then, you know, like you just said, Cecily Tyson and Sounder is fantastic.
What do you think about the representation of black women in the movies in the 70s? Or are you a fan of Coffee or Claudine?
I don't recall either movie, so I have homework. So I will defer to this, Denise.
So I didn't see Coffee until I was a grown-up because my mother wouldn't let me go see it. I was probably in my, just reaching my double digits and when that came out. But I was a fan of Pam Grier secretly. I didn't want my parents to know because she represented a sex symbol and I wasn't supposed to, you know, really pay attention to that, I guess. So I saw that one later and I just felt like she was so powerful and I love that in that character. And when I look at Diane Carroll in Claudine as she was in, wasn't she Julia?
Julia.
That she did, she was kind of every woman, but a strong every woman and a struggling every woman and every woman who knew how to also find some joy. And yes, she bubble bathed with lemon fresh joy. I didn't know that people didn't do that. But anyway,
we used Dawn.
So I really did like what the women characters were doing at that time, even though they were very sexualized and they were in a box in some ways, they were present. They were beginning to be present. Yeah. And they were present in with kind of a black power energy. And so I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. And I love Cicely Tyson in Sounder. I watched that a zillion times as a kid.
Did you?
Yes.
I've only just seen it the first time for the for the show. And it's an amazing movie.
Remind me afterwards to tell you the movie I saw for the first time. I won't say it here because I might lose my black card.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, I like that tease, don't you?
You can't.
You kind of have to tell us now.
Yeah, you have to, Denise.
I never watched it all the way through.
What?
I watched little pieces of it through the years, and I finally sat down a few weeks ago and watched it from Neruda to the Tudor. That's my hint.
Oh, Boomerang?
Boomerang?
No, but it's that flavor. Friday.
What?
Oh.
See how y'all do?
Damn!
Well, you didn't hurt anybody but yourself.
Right. No, I got to enjoy it now.
Okay.
I already am a fan of Cube, and he was an excellent writer and filmmaker back then.
Yeah.
So, yes. At the time, I thought it was just going to be buffoonery, and that's why I didn't watch it.
I can see from the outside looking in thinking
that. Yeah. That's why I didn't watch it.
Yeah.
But there are a few things I, you know, I'm like, let's go back.
Sure.
I had to do that with some music, some rap music that I decided I wasn't going to like before I heard it.
Okay, that's fair. No, I feel you. I feel you in that. And now you are a fan of Friday.
Yes.
Have you seen the sequels?
Not yet, but my cousins tell me that it probably may not
work you don't
my time.
No.
The first one is all you need.
The first is
to maintain black card status. That's all you need.
That's all you need.
We're talking black card status, and we're going to be talking about Origin. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. True. Facts.
Why did I bring that up?
Because we're leading into the
good transition.
That's right. We're moving, always moving towards that. Always be closing.
Yeah. Is there a cast card? I'm sorry.
Stop it.
Continuing. We got an email, Vincent, from Michael Sykes.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
A short and sweet question about music.
All right.
Hey, Len and Vincent, this is a music question. I'll keep it short and sweet. I was wondering if these bands or groups need their solo artists, or does the solo artist need them? Mm. I think this is much in the way that we were talking about.
Probably LTD.
LTD, mm-hmm. Yeah.
They needed him.
Yeah, but I think he needed them too.
Like the best Jeffrey Osborne is
with LTD.
Is with LTD.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you never think about it until you think about it.
What's the one with, I wrote a love song, it goes something like this. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. What's that one?
That's LTD.
That's LTD.
Okay, then.
Mm-hmm. okay.
I still like when he comes up to me with the mic when you go to see him. In
oh, yeah.
Woo.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he gives a good show.
Yeah.
No one's knocking to give a good show.
But he didn't do any hits after that, huh?
No. Not many. I mean, he had
love
some
the Stranger, Love Ballad.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
I love Jeffrey Osborne.
I mean, come on.
I never went to see LTD when he left, but I went to see him.
Right.
Well, nobody went to see LTD after. did you?
No.
I think. All right. So here we go.
Who we got?
Lenny Williams when he was with Tower of Power.
I don't think Tower of Power needs Lenny Williams.
Nor do I.
Okay.
They are a tower of power.
Yeah.
It's in the name.
Fair enough. We talked about Jeffrey Osborne.
Mm-hmm.
Lionel Richie with the Commodores.
Mm-hmm.
Lionel Richie doesn't need the Commodores, but I like the Commodores music better.
Really?
I'm trying to think of Commodores, Lionel Richie.
I do.
What was
Brick House?
Oh, wait a minute.
Okay.
But I don't even think of Lionel Richie when I think of Brick House.
I don't either.
Yeah, because he's not the...
No.
He's not the...
I think I was
voice.
Back then.
Yeah.
A Brick House.
But Brick House, that'd make your hip dip in a minute, so that's...
Yeah, but it's not Lionel.
No, it's not.
So what else is Commodores?
What is...
I'm trying to think of Lionel Richie Commodores music.
Yeah, because I can't recall.
Pretty sure Zoom is a Commodore song.
That is. It is. Zoom.
Oh, yeah. Zoom. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. There you go.
Can somebody hit me with a note?
Because you can hear his voice in that.
Somebody do a...
If we do, we have to pay.
Oh.
That's the truth.
That's real.
Yeah, that's the truth.
What about if you sing it off key and it doesn't sound like the same song?
Go ahead, Denise.
No. Yeah, we actually have gotten in trouble.
Okay, we'll do that.
Just and now we're on YouTube.
Yeah, right? They don't play.
Don't play. Mm-hmm. But outside of Zoom, can you think of a hit Commodores with Lionel Richie? Every Lionel Richie hit I'm thinking of is...
Yeah, Hello was him.
I think Tom's a Lady is the Commodores.
That is.
Okay, that's two.
I'm pretty sure that is.
I mean, a man's got like about 80 hits. And you're reaching for two that were with the Commodores.
And he's still relevant. And
Yeah. I think you've got a pick.
Yeah.
All right, so he didn't need the comment.
Yeah. Right.
Charlie Wilson.
Oh, yeah,
the
Sail
Gap
On.
Band.
Somebody said Sail On. Yeah, see.
Sail On.
I don't know. This might. I'm going to just say it.
Jesus is love.
You don't like Charlie Wilson solo.
I don't like Charlie Wilson solo music.
Me neither.
So.
What don't you like about it?
It sounds plastic.
It sounds like, speaking of the artist, it sounds like there was blood in the water with R. Kelly.
Well, that was a lot of the hits.
And he said, there's a spot open.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So, yeah. Wow.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, that's me myself speaking personally.
And that's me myself speaking personally.
In my opinion.
And I've seen Charlie Wilson do a show on his own. And, you know, God bless the man. He still gets on stage and he's rocking his...
And I don't knock his hustle. Like, I'm actually happy for him.
Yeah.
He picked up that R. Kelly.
Because he's from an era where they made no money.
That's... And I was just about to say that.
They got very little royalties and all of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm never going to listen to any Charlie Wilson music.
Well, I'm not going to say I'm not going to listen to it, but I just prefer Gap Band.
Right.
That's where I would go with it.
All right.
How about, we talked about JT from Kool & the Gang. Maurice White and Philip Bailey with Earth, Wind, and Fire. Did Maurice White go solo?
I was just about to say, what was Maurice White's solo song?
You know what? I think he did go. I think he did try and release a solo album.
I have no memory of it.
And no, neither does he.
Yeah.
But, oh, dang.
But I think he did.
That's
now,
kind of unfair. Like, who are you going to pick over Earth, Wind, and Fire?
Earth, Wind, and Fire. My gosh.
Like, you're not going to pick anybody over Earth, Wind,
I know.
Fire.
It doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
It don't even matter.
First concert I got to go to without an adult staying with me.
Nice.
I was really? About 14. Dropped us off at Cobo Arena. Nice. Cobo Hall, it was called at the
That's
time.
A good show.
In Detroit.
She still remembers.
Yeah, we snuck lighters in so that we could hold them up. You know, we literally held lighters up. The end of the show.
You had to sneak in a lighter?
I was 14.
Oh, so you had to sneak in.
Yeah.
So not like everybody was sneaking in.
I had no idea what other people were doing. I know I was sneaking lighter.
And it was dangerous behavior back then.
It was. You're a bit of an outlaw.
Right. A rebel from
the wild streets.
You're a wild girl.
And I got my Pam Grier t-shirt on.
Ah. See, right there.
All right. Well, thank you, Michael, for that email.
Thank you, Michael.
We got one more email, Vincent, and this is from Michael Lockett.
Hey, what's up, Michael?
Len and Vince, another great episode, top to bottom. I'm not sure if you ever heard the story of how the song I Feel For You, written and performed originally by Prince on his debut album, came to be a reignition point for Chaka Khan's career. But here's the short version. Prince, on their first face-to-face meeting, pranked her and stole studio time. To make up for it, he told his manager he'd write her a hit someday. A revamped I Feel For You was the perfect vehicle to go on the break-in soundtrack. Pair became friends and years later would be instrumental in the album that Vince mentioned. I think that's the album.
Yeah, Coming to My House.
Right.
That's the 90s Chaka Khan album that Prince produced.
So there you go.
I never knew that story.
Me neither.
It's
good to have people around. It's, you know, all jokes aside, like I never really liked that fan word. Yeah. So missionaries, because like they're all really, like everybody's really smart.
Yeah.
So.
My mission time travels took me first back to, well, watch this, just a little backstory. Michael Lockett is a recent fan of the show, so he will watch our live stream, so he's up to date, but then he's listening to old episodes.
I like it.
In real time. So check this out.
Okay.
My mission time travels took me first back to Friday.
Ooh.
And then to Running Scared.
Okay.
I loved them both then when I first saw them, and I still love these movies today. I really can't pick two better movies that show friendship, bromance, or whatever people want to call it, in its most sincere form. I think the vast majority of Black men have a friend who reminds them of Craig, Smokey, Ray, or Danny. Billy Crystal, in my opinion, gets a Black honorarium for his role. He wasn't trying to be Black. He was a genuine friend to a Black man. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Two quick questions. Are these two pairings two of the most memorable in cinematic history? Do they rank with pairings in films like Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith in Men in Black, Charles Grodin, Robert De Niro in Midnight Run,
mm-hmm.
Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon in Some Like It Hot, Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi in The Blues Brothers, or Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte in 48 Hours, all the best, Michael. And I think the two pairings that he's talking about are Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines and
Ice Cube and Chris Tucker.
Chris Tucker. Well, they're certainly not as iconic because, one, both of these pairings are just one and done. So even though a few of the ones that he mentioned one and done. But I think it's interesting that Cube and Chris Tucker, not even just the Friday movies, pretty much every movie that Cube has done since then has been trying to kind of like
rekindle, chase
that chemistry with mm-hmm. someone. Because he didn't even, as much as he thought he did, he didn't even have it with
Mike Epps.
Mike Epps, yeah. Or Kevin Hart. He did a couple of movies with Kevin Hart, yeah. And I don't think they had the same connection. There was just something special about those two. And Quiet as Kept, I don't think Chris Tucker had.
And Jackie Chan don't really, I mean, that's a whole different energy.
Yeah.
I would throw Bad Boys in there.
Okay, Will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought that had great chemistry.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and they keep making that movie.
Number 4 comes out in June.
Mm-hmm. Number 4 comes out. Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good. Mm-hmm. I think that a missed opportunity is Eddie and Martin, because they had great chemistry in Life.
Yeah.
I thought. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
They're still alive. There's still time.
There is, but Eddie's at a different speed right now. Eddie.
You got to get Eddie out the house. And I don't know what gets Eddie out the house, frankly, both literally and unfortunately figuratively in a lot of these roles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like you can tell Eddie is thinking about that other half of the chicken sandwich in the fridge. You know, like you can always tell, like if you're at work and you talk to somebody, you can tell they're thinking about that other half. Like you go to Hoagie Fest and you get one, but you want to eat the whole hoagie at lunch. So it's in the fridge and you know, they're like, yeah, wait till I get home.
And they didn't hear a word you said.
Right.
Oh my God.
And I feel like that's been Eddie Murphy since Dreamgirls.
Well, he was so hurt by except for
Dolomite, of course.
He wasn't good in that. To me.
You didn't think he was good in Dreamgirls?
Oh, here we go again.
I thought he was hilarious.
Really? You didn't like him in Dreamgirls?
That's what y'all said when I said I didn't like a certain character in The Color Purple. You were like, what? Yeah. I didn't like Eddie Murphy in Dreamgirls.
What about?
I felt like I saw him acting.
You thought he was pushing?
Yeah, I felt like I saw him acting the whole time.
He wasn't.
He did not. I couldn't. Yeah. I wasn't able to dispel. I couldn't separate from knowing who he was in that film. Mm. I was watching Eddie Murphy the whole time.
Wow.
See, I see that, but I think to a degree that's what he was trying to put out. Another living a life a different way, that could have been him the way he went. Okay. Don't get me wrong.
But I shouldn't have to know that.
Oh, that's fair.
Did you like him in Dolomite Is My Name?
I don't think I watched it. Look at the title. You know who I am.
Well, it's not a Dolomite.
Not a Dolomite movie, though. Now you judge.
Hey, you can't. So,
I mean, Dolomite's in the title twice. I can't.
So you have to call me when titles like that come out.
So now
we have to show you
and say no. This is one you should watch.
Do you have a newsletter?
No,
we do have a newsletter.
We do actually.
I asked for a newsletter. I asked for a call.
All right. Well, you should watch Dolomite Is My Name. It's not a Dolomite movie. It's about Rudy Ray Moore.
Okay. All right. Then I'll watch it.
What's our girl's name? Just won the Oscar.
Divine Joy Randolph.
Joy Randolph. This is, if not her first film,
the movie
many of us saw her a lot of people the first time. Yeah. Okay. And she's very good.
Very good. And you know who else is very good in that movie? Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes almost steals the movie.
I like Wesley.
He's very good in this. So
I think, honestly, I think to you, what you were saying, I think Dolomite is the last time Eddie was in like close to Eddie's speed.
Well, I said except for so it was like Dreamgirls and then Dolomite. But then besides that, he's just.
Yeah, because I didn't like Coming to America. Right. I didn't think he was good in that.
Right. Like you can tell he just.
The other sandwich.
Other sounds, he realizes he didn't watch the last season of Stranger Things. Like, it's so much he could be doing at the house. And in full disclosure, he is my spirit animal. Most of the time, I'm like that. Like, I could be at the house right now.
What are you thinking about you could be doing at the house right now?
I am replaying Fallout, which is a video game. And I've built my dream house in the game. Okay. So I got to get aluminum so that I can build my hutch to repair my armor. You asked.
I knew not to.
That sounds like one of those games. Yeah. He was trying to teach me how to play to build the house. I'm like,
right, yeah.
I can't. So, I don't understand.
Right.
But okay.
I'm actually, so like, and the thing, so it's post-apocalyptic. So, you know, a lot of it's just gathering stuff.
Yeah.
So I have a pool table and I found a rack, but now slowly but surely I'm getting all the balls so that I can have a full set on the pool table.
The joy on your face. Delightful.
Fix your microphone.
He was so excited. Tell me that.
Oh, yeah.
Did you find a cue already as well?
Yes, I have a cue. I have three pool sticks. Yeah.
I'm feeling
it. Mm-hmm.
Can I continue?
This is a testament to you all.
That he left that.
That I'm here right now.
Yeah. I feel really special.
My wife made a 15-bean soup. That I'm eating off of.
I know
like just a turkey wing in it.
Say turkey wing.
The meat is
on, wife.
Right.
Wife.
Yes. So you know.
Did you make cornbread?
Is there a refrigerator in here? You got a bowl of it?
No, I don't.
Is there cornbread?
There's no cornbread. I have it over rice. My people from Louisiana.
Yeah, that's what I am.
Yeah, so I had it right over the rice.
Yeah.
So.
Ooh, shoot.
Miss Moxtail recently put him over the rice.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
I carry cayenne.
From Denise? Pepper.
Antigua and Barbuda.
Okay, my people from Mobile in Louisiana.
See,
that's how we eat it, over the rice.
Exactly.
That's right.
Can we do the show?
Sorry. Okay. Oh, go ahead, Lynn.
Go ahead, Lynn.
No, go ahead. No.
Go ahead, Lynn.
Go on your own mission. Lamb chop.
We won't tell.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Stop watching it. Like too much inside baseball.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was our emails, ladies and gentlemen. If you want us to let us know what is going on your mind, have thoughts that you want to share with us, you can email us at michaumission@gmail.com. That's michaumission@gmail.com. Can't promise that your email will be read, but keep them coming because we read each and every one.
We do and appreciate them. Thank you so much.
All right. And now.
Top five. Who's your top five?
Top five, ladies and gentlemen, where I give Vincent and Denise a list, and they share their scintillating commentary on it. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, keeping in theme, we are going to be reviewing Origin, filmed by Ava DuVernay, starring Anjanae Ellis Taylor, that is based on the book Cass by Isabel Wilkerson.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a movie that tells a story about basically a nonfiction book.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of the movie that doesn't match the book.
Yes.
Right.
And what I have here are my top five, not necessarily the top five, but my top five movies that ain't the book.
Okay.
Okay.
Differ a little bit.
All right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, starting at number five, we have The Jungle Book from 1967, the animated film.
That is not the book.
It is not the book. It is no surprise that the Disney movie is on the list. They often take darker stories, such as The Little Mermaid, and twist them to have happy endings, The Jungle Book being such a one. The animated story by Disney is overall cute. This is because Disney told the design team to ignore the tone of the book and just focus on making the story as upbeat and fun as possible. In the book, you see a lot more animalistic nature of the animals. Though they call themselves people of the jungle, they are distinctly animals following the laws of the jungle. So it's a lot more danger with the tiger that is infused on this little boy in the book. You do not see in the animated film The Jungle Book. Are you fans of the movie The Jungle Book?
I can't say.
There were several versions of the Jungle Book movie. There was one that the Disney one that you're talking about. And there are things about it I liked and things I didn't because of the racism and whatnot that are part of those kinds of films. Mm-hmm. And the one, I saw another one, I guess about 3 years ago. I don't know.
Right, the kind of like computer animated one.
I didn't finish watching it.
Okay.
I didn't want to.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was well shot. It was well edited. But I just wasn't interested in that particular evolving love story.
I feel you.
You know, I like the cartoon. And, you know, I think all of those Disney live action things are just money grabs.
They are.
So.
No doubt. Number four.
Okay.
Staying in the world of animation.
Mm-hmm.
From 1954. Mm-hmm. Animal Farm.
Mm.
Animal Farm, an animated movie, was supposed to tell the story of the book written by George Orwell, like The Lord of the Flies. It was meant to be a piece to describe the Russian Revolution in ways that anyone could understand, even without knowing any of the history. The animated film didn't exactly have the same goal in mind, however. During the Cold War, the CIA actually funded the movie as anti-Soviet Union propaganda. Mm-hmm. This meant that a lot of the story had to change, most notably the ending. The ending of the movie was much more uplifting, showing an overthrow of the pig, Napoleon. Meanwhile, the book was darker and more tragic, as the book revealed that the pigs were no longer distinguishable from the humans.
That's right.
Now, I do remember that because I read the book. In school.
I don't remember the cartoon changing the ending, but I realize I probably haven't seen the cartoon since I was a kid. Because like you said, it's one of those books that you just read the book. And it's, you know, it's like that nice sweet spot when you're like 12. It's like, ooh, it's a grown-up book. I can read this.
Right.
Yeah.
I liked it. I don't know why I've always had a weird fascination with Animal Farm. Like, I enjoyed it as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then years ago, I think either TBS or TNT did a live.
Yeah, yeah. Action. That was pretty good.
That was actually pretty good.
Yeah, because it was scary.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't do scary.
Okay.
What?
Mm-mm. Way my nerves are set up. I live alone. I'll be at home bugging out. I can't.
That's fair.
I'm like, did anybody hear that? It's just me. I'm just talking to me.
That's fair.
Okay. All right. Number three. This is the last one that's in the world of animation, but it kind of blends the two.
Okay.
From 1988. Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Mm-hmm. I did see that.
Called Who Censored Roger Rabbit in book form. Who Framed Roger Rabbit is an interesting movie that talks about the world if cartoons and real life combined. Though it has cartoon characters, it is a very adult-oriented movie that focuses on sharp and often harsh realities. While it has a mix of some sexy characters, it doesn't really match the book. This isn't entirely the director's fault. The book is weird. It doesn't quite live up to what the author was trying to do, creating a balance between science fiction and real life. He also tried to add a little mystery and several subplots going on all at once. And while the director liked the idea of pushing the boundaries between animation and real life, the plot wasn't super useful or movie adaptable, so he threw it out and went with his own stories instead so that he can make that blending of all the different characters and make a lot more of that, those fun little Easter eggs that we remember the movie for happen.
And what year was that?
1988.
Yeah, I think I had to sneak that, watch that movie.
Sneak to watch Roger Rabbit?
Because Jessica Rabbit, she was just ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. And, you know, Mary Lou wasn't playing that. Yeah.
Do you remember this? There was a, this was back in the days of Laserdisc, that the movie went out on Laserdisc, like some of the animators had slipped in like real, like,
oh, that's
sexy
right.
scenes of her.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't remember.
So there's a scene.
I didn't have a laser disc. I was gonna say we didn't have that.
There's a scene where they're all like in the taxi, you know, that talking taxi, and I think it like rides into some dip or something, and tires blow, and they all get knocked out onto the like the side of the road. On a laser disc, if you slow it down, as the nerds will, this. Jessica comes bounding out of the car, bounds out of her clothes, up on a tree that kind of like, you know, has her way a little bit with her, and then bounces back into her clothes so that she still matches the last scene.
I am clutching my invisible pearl. My goodness. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't see any of that.
You slowed that down, huh?
A couple times.
It was just what Tipper Gore was talking about.
You were treating it like you were a DJ.
I've read that somewhere.
Right. Research.
So I heard. Research bait. Right. He researched it for the
research bait.
Research.
That's right. We take this very seriously.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Number two. From 2004.
Mm-hmm.
I, Robot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Will Smith stars in this action sci-fi as Del Spooner,
mm-hmm.
a detective who harbors a strong distrust of robots, mm-hmm. particularly after an apparent suicide of a robotics scientist, Dr. Alfred Lanning. The movie is loosely based on a short story collection of the same name by Isaac Asimov, but it uses few of his ideas. While some scenes are taken from Asimov's stories, the plot is wholly original. I, Robot has virtually nothing to do with the book. Mm-hmm. But some say that it is still fun as hell.
Yeah, we talked about I, Robot, talking about your little nerd hearts. It enraged the nerd in me, like the 13-year-old version of myself who loved those short stories.
Yeah,
I, Robot is a mess when you compare it.
Only in comparison to that.
Right. And really, you know, not to go too far down that rabbit hole. When you look at the development of it, they weren't even going to call it iRobot.
They're going to call it something
totally. Yeah, you know.
What are they going to call it? Do you know?
Just random Will Smith vehicle that Will Smith's people were in a room and the studio's people were in a room. And they said, let's make a deal. And then they said, well, this has name recognition. Mm-hmm.
They basically
rented the name.
See, I never read the short stories. I'm curious now. But I really enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
It is why I don't have an iRobot vacuum cleaner.
Maybe.
Oh, really?
I'm serious. I'm like, oh, heck no.
Siri, don't say nothing to me.
That's why I talk nice to the stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I talk nice to
Siri. Yeah.
Like, I say thank you.
Siri can mess your whole life.
Really?
Right, if things go left.
Yeah.
I want our robot she'll overlords to yeah, know
this one's
that
right.
You know.
This is my human.
Yeah. Right, mm-mm. Right.
Mm-mm. Yeah, so. Okay. I don't play with Siri or none of them.
Me neither. I don't have, no.
Mm-mm. And see? It's bad nerves. Because of that movie.
It's all because of iRobot.
It gelled it for me, yes.
That's fair.
Okay. See, here's the thing, though. If you were a fan of... was it The Matrix? Yeah, The Matrix.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And remember, Vincent, remember when they put out the shorts of the Matrix?
Yeah, the Animatrix.
The Animatrix. And correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't it one of those shorts where you see how society turns against the robots?
Yes.
And you would understand. I would understand.
Right, you're on the robot side. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, they turn against the robots hard. Mm-hmm. And so...
Now, if this were a few generations earlier, more than that, maybe 100 years earlier, and the robots were enslaved people?
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the whole Isaac Asimov.
That whole uprising?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, all of those dudes, you know, we can't say black people and we're writing civil rights, so we just take out black people and replace them with robots.
Now I really have to read the short story.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, and number one. Another Will Smith movie, this one from 2007, I Am Legend.
Yeah.
Which was originally a novella by Richard Matheson about a man who was one of the survivors of a world where vampires had taken control and wiped out most of the humanity.
Mm-hmm.
The movie was about the same idea, but the two told very different stories. In the movie, Will stars as Robert Neville, a virologist who was trying to find a cure to save the world and spent much of the movie slaughtering vampires where they slept. He was a hero in this movie trying to find a cure. In the book, it was completely different as he was a killer and the vampires lived in fear of him, the new monster.
Wow.
Totally different
read
on that.
Because the studio chickened out. We actually talked about, like, they actually have an ending in the movie that has that twist that you realize.
Where you discover that.
You realize that he's been a serial killer the whole time against this new life form. They did the studio, they did the test audiences. Yeah. And, you know, audiences couldn't believe that Will Smith could just be violent out of nowhere. Yeah. And so they changed the ending to...
That was pre-slap.
Yes. The irony is that they're supposedly working on a sequel that retcons the ending that says, because in the movie version that came out, spoiler, he dies at the end.
Right.
So he sacrifices himself because he's a hero. But in the original ending, he realizes that he's a monster and then, you know, basically goes away and tries to reform. And they're saying that the sequel is going to use the original ending.
So how are they going to bring him back to life?
Well, they're saying that what you saw in the movie didn't actually happen, right?
I'm assuming
at some point Patrick Duffy is going to be in a shower and he's going to stick his head out and say, hey, how are you this morning? She's going to say, I had the weirdest dream. And then we're going to pretend
that you slapped Chris Rock.
Right.
Had the weirdest
After the
dream.
Slap, they're like, you know what? We can't have him.
Right. So
we can sell that.
So that was our top five, ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
Coming up, where it's time for the Game of Kings.
That's right. It's continuity between the novel and the movie.
Six Degrees of Derville Martin, ladies and gentlemen, where I give Vincent and the Denises two actors, and they have six movies or less to connect them to Derville Martin, who is a book and a movie all unto himself.
It's a multimedia experience.
Yes. Are you familiar with Derville Martin? Is an actor who stars in pretty much every 70s.
Right, he's in a lot of movies. Okay. So we said, you know what? He's in everything.
You got a picture of?
We can probably connect him to anybody. I don't believe you can. And then that's what
this
we did.
This is how it...
Yet, even though he is in every... one of those movies, he also shows up strangely in movies such as
Rosemary's Baby.
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Well, give me the person while you're looking up the picture.
There is Derville Martin. Uh-huh. And just another piece of trivia. In Dolomite, My Name is Dolomite, Wesley Snipes plays Derville Martin. Because Derville Martin.
You can see Wesley Snipes with that haircut. Yeah, yes.
He's an actor.
I don't remember his face.
But once you see it, you'll never forget it. All right, Vincent.
All right.
Now,
what we
if
got?
You did Huggy Bear, then I can. Anyway, no.
Antonio Vargas.
Exactly.
All right, Vincent. In six, keeping in theme. We are going to be reviewing Origin tonight. Mm-hmm. So, Origin is off the table.
Okay.
In six movies or less. Connect Derville Martin
to
John Bernthal.
Oh, damn. The two big things I know him from are TV.
Yes, but he has quite a filmography, a little bit of, not super long, but it's a notable filmography.
What was he in before Origin?
Other movies.
Yeah, he's got quite a filmography here.
No, that's not him.
Let me see for a second. I'm trying to see if there is a movie that I there's definitely a movie that I know you've seen that he was.
I was going to say that one, yeah.
That he was in.
Mm-hmm. Is he thinking about that or is he thinking about a sandwich?
I think he's actually thinking about the movie. Well, he said the beans.
He's thinking of Captain America's.
He was not in Captain America. He hasn't been in a Marvel movie. He's only been in a Marvel movie.
Right, because he's Punisher.
If I give you this movie, it'll be too easy, Vince, so I don't want to give it.
Well, then give me the other movie.
Let me think. This is another movie. Did you see The Accountant?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's got, what's his name?
Affleck.
Ben Affleck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a good movie.
It is. They're making it a sequel.
All right.
I could see that.
It's good.
We'll use that then. Because Derville Martin, Durville Martin is in Five on the Black Hand Side. We'll use my movie from a couple weeks ago. I like to talk about this movie. Durville Martin is in Five on the Black Hand Side with Dick Anthony Williams. Dick Anthony Williams is in Mo Better Blues with Cinda Williams. Mm-hmm. Cinda Williams is in One False Move mm-hmm. with Michael Beach.
Right.
Michael Beach is in Aquaman.
Yes.
With Jason Momoa. Jason Momoa is in Justice League with Ben Affleck, who's in The Account. Wow.
Very good.
With John.
Got there just in time.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
Yeah. What was he in that I would know?
King Richard.
You know, I still have not seen King Richard. I still have not seen it. I know. Don't look at me like that. You just saw Friday.
Yeah, Denise, you can't look at
anyone. You have no ground to stand on.
I'm trying to toss all the shade over there.
Hey, who was that?
No.
The look.
Hey. Don't get fired on your day off. See, you just got that reference.
You mean by Felicia?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
You had no idea.
All
right. I just liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It is one of those movies that you'll know all the quotes, so you feel like...
Right, you feel like you saw it even though you didn't.
It's the culture. It's in the culture. Mm-hmm. It's like woven in.
Sections of it.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
You just got knocked up. I knew that one.
Yes.
And the hiding the jewelry. Mm-hmm. But I just had never seen it from beginning.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmama gave me that.
He gonna cry when he gets to the car.
Very good, Vincent.
All right.
That was impressive.
All right. We got one more for you.
Love it. Yeah. Make some money.
One more for you, Vincent.
All right. Who we got?
You should go on Password with Kiki Palmer.
Okay.
That'd be fun.
Okay.
I would watch.
It's got good word association. Good association.
You going to make that happen?
I'll call my people.
All right.
All right. All right, Vincent. In six films or less, mm-hmm. connect Durville Martin to also in Origin. This might be your blind spot.
Who?
Vera Farmiga.
Who is that? Can I see her picture? Like, who is that?
But it was the way he said it.
Oh, come on, man. Is she in stuff?
She's in Origin.
No, besides Origin.
Yes.
How many scenes?
No, remember, she's like one of the newspaper managers.
She's her editor.
You're right, the editor.
And then, yeah.
She's in quite a few movies.
Uh-huh.
She is actually one of the stars of a movie that I know you have at least seen two of, if not all of them.
Which one?
No, you've seen one, two, at least two of them I know you have seen. We have talked about them.
The star?
Yeah, she
was. Who does she play in the movies?
She's one of the stars. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she is.
What movie, Lynn? Because I don't believe you. I don't believe you. I'm telling you to your face. What movie is she in that she is one of the stars that I've seen two of them?
See, when they do the hand and lean forward, it's a...
Because I don't believe them.
That's when you're serious.
It's the truth. It's the truth. Yes. She was in Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Wait, is she Millie Brown's mom?
Do you really need to know that? She's in the movie.
Okay. All right.
Have you seen the movie?
Yes.
Was I right?
I mean, I guess. I mean, it's a Godzilla movie.
If either I was right or I wasn't, Mister, I don't believe you.
You're actually wrong.
That's only because he.
What, did you see the movie?
No, I did see that she's one of the stars in the movie.
She is one of the stars. No, she's not the name star.
No, she's not the name star at all. She's not even the name human star. She's not. Millie Brown is over her. What's the brother's name from Atlanta?
Kyle, from Atlanta. Brian Tyree Henry?
Brian Tyree Henry is billed over her.
No, he's not.
Breaking Bad is billed over her.
That Breaking Bad dies in the first one.
Okay, Friday Night Lights is billed over her.
That's the only other one. That's the only other person billed over, billed over her.
But okay, fine. So
you just can't give it to me.
No, because she's not one of the stars.
She is one of the stars.
She's just in the movie.
Dylan, is this what it happens? Dylan.
Dervell Martin.
Dude, she's no. Come on, let you get away with that. In order, Kyle Chandler, Friday Night Lights, Vera Farmiga, and Millie Bobby Brown. In that order.
They just listed alphabetically.
Brown.
Yeah, I'm not at all. Stop. Talking about one of the stars in a damn Godzilla movie. Yes, all right, fine. Dervell Martin is, sorry, so, all right. This is how we're going to do this. You know what? I'm just going to use the same movie. I'm going to go the exact same way.
Okay.
Dervell Martin is in Five on the Black Hand Side with Dick Anthony Williams, who is in Mo' Better Blues with Cinda Williams, mm-hmm. who is in One False Move with Michael Beach, mm-hmm. who is in If Beale Street Could Talk with Brian Tyree Henry, mm-hmm. who's in Godzilla with, what's her name?
Vera Farmiga?
Yes.
In Godzilla what?
King of the Monsters.
Ha, you're wrong, because Brian Tyree Henry is not in that movie.
He's in Godzilla.
He's not in Godzilla.
He isn't Godzilla.
No, he's not.
What's the name of the movie, Lynn? Come on. We got stuff to do. What's the name of the movie? You're being pedantic. What's the name of the movie?
I'm being pedantic.
What is the name of the movie? Godzilla what? Godzilla colon what word?
It's not Godzilla colon what. I'm trying to, it's Kong versus Godzilla. That's the one that he's in. He's in the Kong versus Godzilla movie.
No, he's in two Godzilla movies.
He's not in,
in two Godzilla
let's
movies.
Let's put it this way. He's not in Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Okay. Which one's he in? Godzilla what?
All right, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to scared of you.
Right, I just have to look it up.
Mm-hmm. I got to look it up. Because that's not the movie that I have up. Uh-huh. He's not the person that I'm working on right now. It's what you always do. Got me uh-huh. jumping through hoops. Right. Right. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Right. We want to get into
this. It's easy to talk stuff when you got the Google in front of you.
Bruh. All right, filmography, Brian Tyree Henry.
Oh, my God. You had to go to his whole film. Just
Godzilla. He is in Godzilla versus Kong.
Okay, Godzilla versus Kong. Is she in that too?
No, because her character died in the second one, in King of the Monsters.
Okay. Dervell Martin is in get to it quick. Because I'll get to Millie Brown. Dervell Martin is in. I want to get to it quick. No. Okay, Dervell Martin is on Five on the Black Hand Side. Dick Anthony Williams. Dick Anthony Williams is in Mo' Better Blues. Samuel Jackson. Samuel Jackson is in Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr. Robert Downey Jr. is in Tropic Thunder with Tom Cruise.
I think I know who you're trying to get to.
Mm-mm. That's going to take too long.
I think you were there.
No, because I'm going to take Tom Cruise with a cock diesel Superman.
Oh, you can go to Tom Cruise or somebody else.
Not to get to Millie Brown.
Yeah, you can.
Who?
Ken Watanabe.
What's he with? Oh, with The Last Samurai? With Ken Watanabe. And then Ken Watanabe is in what?
Godzilla King of Monsters.
Oh, that's right. Because the only reason they have him is because he has a Japanese accent.
That's right.
And he says Godzilla.
Right.
Like, it's the only reason he's in the movie. All right, Ken Watanabe is in Godzilla with, what's her name?
Vera Farmiga.
Yes, Vera Farmiga. There you go. All right.
That's how your brain working. Yeah. From the outside. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Still impressive.
Yes.
Very impressive.
There you go.
Well done.
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen.
That is impressive. Mm-hmm.
It is now time for our review of Origin.
We'll be right back with our movie review after we step to these messages.
Made me promise I'd come by today. It's my birthday.
Wait, today is your birthday?
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
It's Brett.
I'm Isabel.
Yeah, I know.
Most relationships end. Friendships, romances, they break. You okay? If you look closely, you'll find something tragic was happening.
Are you interested in writing something for us?
I don't do assignments anymore.
Yeah, well, you're a better writer than most people do anything. Have you heard the tapes?
No. Of what?
Stafford Police Department, this is Sean.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. Looks like he's up to no good or something.
I want to be in the story. Really inside the story. And build a thesis that shows how all of this is linked.
I gotta be honest with you, I don't understand. I don't see it.
You go and write your stories. Folks need to know about this.
You're trying to make sense of racism, but your thesis is flawed.
It was all lies. They knew we weren't inferior. You don't escape trauma by ignoring it. You escape trauma by confronting it. I don't write questions. I write answers.
The unspoken system that has shaped America and chronicles how lives today are defined by a hierarchy of human divisions are told in a slightly fictionalized story directed by Ava DuVernay. Origin, which debuted in 2023, stars Anjanae Ellis-Taylor, John Bernthal, Niecy Nash, Emily Yancey, Finn Wittrock, and Vera Farmiga. In a sensational drama that was selected by our guests, the Denises, for tonight's stop on the Michaud Mission. Denise, what have you to say of Origin?
So much. When we saw this movie, I was not prepared. Like I wasn't prepared for emotions. I went in thinking this was going to be
like the book. It was going to be some kind of documentary. I was prepared for... I didn't. And let me tell you why. Because 2020 was so chaotic when it came out. You know, I work in the space of media. So I was dealing with a lot of imagery coming in, right? Because I deal in the space of photography and video and having to make decisions, watching Black men get killed, people, you know, being beat up and all kinds of stuff. So I was taking all that in in real time. So I bought the book because I was like, I want to support this woman. I bought the book and I was like, I just can't today. So when I saw that the movie came out and Denise called me and I was like, oh, say less, let's do this. So when I came in with a space of intellect and ready to take in information. And as soon as I saw the hoodie, I was like, I remember looking at Denise like, like, what is this? You know, and then I knew like, oh, this is going to be a ride. That was my first thought, was as soon as I recognized the first scene as to what was happening, I kind of got like a little lump in my throat, right? Because it brings you immediately back to that year, that time, and all the things that go with it. And I thought, what are we about to watch?
Right.
She was doing in the film is what... we as journalists often experience. So she was experiencing it the same way that folks who were doing the kind of work you were doing had to go through it. You had to really, you had to watch.
Right, it has. You couldn't turn away. And what we're talking about at the beginning of the film, ladies and gentlemen, is the dramatization, or more or less, of the Trayvon Martin. His murder. It is definitely one of those things that you just feel like your hand's getting...
I felt my stomach turn because I remember I was sitting on this side of Denise and I remember going, like, I remember looking her dead in the face, like, and she was like, she was like, this, we're going to take this ride together. And then I kind of settled back in and was, and you become the witness that you always are, right? Because when there's, you know, there's evidence and then there's excess, right? And so you become a witness when it's evidence. And so I'm like, we're right back in the witness seat.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take this ride because that's what you need to do. Mm-hmm. But it moved my stomach. As soon as I realized what was happening, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah. Because they used the real 911 calls.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
But even before then, I was like, what am I about to see?
Yes.
Right.
Because we knew what was about to happen.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
Right. Right.
And they showed in the film, you see him in all of the humanity that was lost in the coverage.
Right.
Yeah.
Of what happened to
him. Right.
You saw that boy who could have been my son, my nephew, just getting something from the store, talking to his girlfriend, and it's raining.
Mm-hmm.
Or cold, and you put the hoodie on.
Yeah. Or he just put his hoodie
or
on.
Or just put the hood up.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's interesting for those who haven't seen the film or aware of it. It's based on a book by Isabel Wilkerson that takes different moments in history, such as the Trayvon Martin murder, and even going back to, you know, Nazi Germany time. The Holocaust.
In Mississippi.
Mississippi during Jim Crow era. And just looks at all these different pockets of racism. And then even on a global scale. And then along with looking at what is the root cause of that? Because we know that racism isn't just inherent. What is the root cause of racism?
And that's her whole point. When she does cast, she looks at whether or not it really is about racism. Is it about racism or is it about something else? And she looks at the Holocaust. She looks at Jim Crow. And she looks at what happens with the caste system in India and says, this is really about caste. Race just happens to be what's applied to it here or the way it's used. In the States, but it's all the same thing about having one group of people that is separated from another group of people, and then laws made to keep them separate. separate for whatever the purpose is.
Right.
In the Holocaust, they decided to kill people. But again, they were not allowed to marry somebody who was not Jewish with somebody who was Jewish.
Right.
And the same thing here and the same thing in India. And so she was trying to say this isn't it's not all about racism. It's about caste. Why that's important to her is the big question. And perhaps because if you can see it in a global way, you might be able to take a global approach to dealing with it and a connectedness between the people who are impacted by it, both those who think they're benefiting and those who are definitely not. So that's what I took from the book. I did read the book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And I did read it in 2020 with a very angry group of black women in a book club.
Because I remember you saying, do you want to read this book? And I was like, I bought it, but I'm not ready.
Yeah.
And in my head, I was like, I need to be in a space where I can, you know, really take this in. But I wasn't ready in 2020 and it sat on my bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
But when I watched, first of all, I had to go to movies twice, like in the theater. I needed the sound, the whole thing. The first time was so emotional.
Yeah.
That I did not expect. And Denise told me, she was like, I heard this could be a little emotional. I was like, girl, I'm good. I schedule emotions on Thursday. I'm good. Like, you know, I was just like, I don't need a tissue, girl, please. But
and
by
I
the
came in with a
Yeah,
wine.
She came in and I was like in her purse. Like, so the first one was so like emotional. And I think I just related a lot to her because of the stage of life I'm in. You know, you're dealing with parental stuff. You're dealing with a partner.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of her personals entwined.
Yeah, and I was not expecting that emotional thread and finesse. The way she did it was such a eloquent way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go see it a second time to look at the filming techniques. The first time, I noticed some things, but I was overwhelmed by what I saw. And I did not expect that. I felt so like, I was like, oh man, I get it together, Denise, but I just could not.
I think speaking of techniques, I think one of the first things that she does that magically captures that is that the movie is filmed. Everything is filmed on 16 millimeter film. Mm-hmm. And it instantly has that, it looks like memory because it looks like you remember like the movies you will watch. So it automatically puts you in a comfortable place because this is what you're, these are the memories that I remember. And then but it's this real stuff that's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
And that really like hits you hard, man.
Well, it's also, you've got real facts weaved in with other things. You know, they called it a biodrama in one of the things that I read, you know, and I was like, how smart was that to keep us engaged in this way?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's such a heavy you know, people get turned off by talking about racism and race and we did that in 2020. Like, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. Right. I feel like black people don't have an opportunity to be tired and exhausted. I wake up black. I go to bed black. I leave the house black. I get pulled over black. Right.
Yep.
Every black person has a plan when they get pulled over. I do. I throw my keys. Right. It's a whole thing. But I think this was a way to bring people back into the conversation because there's so much woven into it just about life.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. And I just didn't expect that. I thought I was going to see some hard facts. Yes, you're right. Nicely done. But it had so much life.
Absolutely.
In it.
The relationships were amazing. I mean, the life we talk about is with it focuses on Isabel and it's got her mom, that relationship, and dude who had black man swagger without trying.
Her husband.
Yes.
Brent.
Her cousin. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. That relationship. I know that. I personally know that relationship. Yeah. So she magically gave us some reality through these characters, these people. And I think that's part of what made it a little bit easier for her to deliver the things that she talked about, because we looked at how this woman, why and how this woman did the research to write Caste and what fueled her in many ways. I thought, I've already loved Ava DuVernay.
Love
she
her.
Got another notch from me this time.
Yeah.
Well, you're talking about her as a filmmaker, and I think the beginning scene captured, because as you said, just her control of pacing in tone and iconography. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, as you said, as soon as you saw him get the candy, as soon as you see the hood, like Ava DuVernay is well aware of what these images mean. And I think, you know, just to backtrack a moment, what this means for her audience that she's aiming towards. I think Ava DuVernay, from film to film, very unapologetically is centering a Black audience. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone can come see this film, but understand this is my this is my first audience, this Black audience, so that they know as soon as they see this hood, as soon as they see, you know, this young man and the can't, like, they already know where it's going.
You know.
And I've said this before about Ava DuVernay, whether we're talking about something like When They See Us or Fruitvale Station, it's ironically a testament to her filmmaking. Mm-hmm. I find a lot of it very difficult to watch because she's so good at, you know, sort of pulling out these emotions. Mm-hmm. And you know, like you, I read the book, so I was expecting the book and how she kind of weaves in Isabel Wilkerson's life is, you know, was so smart because Isabel Wilkerson is such an interesting, like what I said last night when I finished is like, you know, this, you know, obviously it's a great film, but quite honestly, I wanted to see the further adventures of Isabel Wilkerson, globe-trotting journalist and researcher, and sort of, you know, well, what's like, I wish they had made a movie adaptation of her first book. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, I like
the sun.
Yeah, like I wanted to see her in you know, these libraries in the South and pulling these archives out.
Maybe she will.
Right, because it's, you know, I thought it was this really interesting tension in a film about caste and about how we all kind of navigate this caste system and racism and sexism because she's a Black woman. But like her personal life.
God.
She has, you know, outside of all of the tragedy and challenges that she has to face, just as you said, just at this moment in your life, just aging parents and, and you know, just the age that you are, your peers are going through health crises. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she has, you know, these beautiful clothes. She gets to travel. Mm-hmm. You know, she goes, you know, she goes to two wonderful parties.
Yes.
And it's like, wow, she's like, she's actually really kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I love that tension.
Yeah, but even when she went to those wonderful parties and she dressed up, right? There's some masking there, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So she stood outside when that I think it's a medium shot or a close-up shot of her taking that deep breath.
Yes.
I was like,
mm-hmm.
I was like
actually
Jesus.
Actually begins to smile.
Yes, right? She puts the mask on and she walks in and I was like, my God. Like, it was just such, that's why I said it's so familiar, right? Of being in spaces where you need to be careful how you phrase it in order for people to receive it, right? So when she goes to pitch her idea, she's like, you know, she's pitching it a certain way, you know, obviously differently than what she would tell her sister cousin, right? And that conversation that they had. But it is the mask that we wear. It is the costume that we wear in these occasions where we have to communicate in a certain way in a certain space to get done what we need done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Agreed.
It's interesting. I definitely saw the mask in that, but I also saw the kind of like a little bit of a callback to the earlier party that you saw her with because she was with her husband at that time.
Right.
Yeah. And like he was, like she was on his arm.
Yes.
And you know, he, even though she was talking to the same people, but he was there in the conversation. He kind of like held back because, you know, a little bit, but you could always feel that he was there and off camera, like she was kind of like reaching back and his hand was there.
Yeah.
And I felt a lot of that in that moment where she's breathing, or there was another moment where she is about to board the plane.
Exactly.
You know, to board a second time. A lot of callbacks to their relationship. And I thought that was really, really smartly done because this was actually the second time that I had seen the film. Yeah. And I had thought, remember John Bernthal being in the movie much longer than he was, but that is right. how impactful his right. yeah. his performance is. He really is gone before the third of the movie is over.
I loved him because black, white, or indifferent, the man that a lot of black women desire is protection.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Black, white, or indifferent, he offered her that protection even when the guy
with
was
permission.
in the yard, right? Mm-hmm. And he would give her a gentle check. You know, and it wasn't like so dominating where you're like, who are you talking to? Right. It was right. just their vibe was visible yeah. on yeah. screen.
Because what he was protecting was the space for her to be herself.
Yes.
He was not, you yes. know, infusing like be yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I loved it.
Oh, it was gorgeous. I actually it's funny watching this film, the scene where she finds, you know, a little bit of spoiler alert, that he's gone.
Yeah.
Watching this, every time I watch this movie, I'm like, I got to introduce my sisters to this movie.
Yeah.
And then that scene comes up, and you talk about real. That's how my sister found my brother-in-law. Ooh. And I'm like, this is like.
Maybe yeah, not. She might
yeah.
not.
Yeah. Not yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not yet. But that is a credit to, like you said, the performance of Anjanae Ellis that moment, and the smart direction to just dead all sound.
Right. They did that in Selma, right? Mm-hmm. They did yes. that in Selma. They also did it in Crash. Remember? He thinks yes. he's getting shot and he screams and there's no sound. Like, I love that technique for film because it allows you to go. Yeah. Right? You can hear the gasp mm-hmm. of the audience. Yeah, right? It's just such a
theater that yes. you know, that emptiness of that sound. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what I loved about that moment is that she runs to him and she's tripping over the bed.
Yes. She falls over that
bed. Because it's, yeah. And that's it's the real. It's the real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
that's the way. The yeah. real of it. Yeah. Yeah. That was that. I mean, it was that moment. There's a moment where. You know, those in-between transitions where she's laying on the grass.
Yeah.
The thing that almost took me out of here, the thing that almost broke me completely down was the mother's hand on her face.
Because,
mm-hmm. you know, when I go home, sometimes it's rough. I lay on my mom's lap and she rubs my face just like that, right? Mm-hmm. And then the repetition of that when the little boy was laying in the grass and she rubbed his face, right? Yeah. And that is such a mama auntie move. When we came in here, you said there was a lot of mama energy, right? Mm-hmm. But that is such a mom caretaker auntie move, that gentle touch that of the hand. On your face, on your back or something. That just is, it's, you're going to be okay. You know, and that mm-hmm. that almost took me out of here. It was those little details, you know, that really, you know, that was the emotional part, which is why I had to go back the second time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I found that I could tell when I was about to lose something. I felt like I was about to lose mm-hmm. my mother. I was about to lose... Mm-hmm. My cousin. Mm-hmm. And so the tears came before the scene for me very often.
Yeah.
And it was same as like with Fruitvale Station. And it just felt like she knew how to invite me into moments I've already experienced, but I'm in this theater. I'll still be breathing afterwards, but the breathing may be painful.
Again, that's said Ava DuVernay. She gets you every mm-hmm. time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what kind of foreshadowing it is, but you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like on some level, like on a subconscious level, you feel it
yes.
before you actually acknowledge it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then you're there in the midst of it.
When Niecy Nash coughed when they were talking,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
I said, oh, my gosh, she's going to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the tears began. They started to build up.
But the detail of even, having the Schweppes ginger ale by the bedside, yeah, exactly. I was like, this mm-hmm. is so black.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's these mm-hmm. little details. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was like that for, what was that movie where she goes to Italy, she falls in love, they adopt a child. What was that
movie? Oh, yes.
It was a chef thing. But you know that was done by a black producer because the black women are in bonnets.
Right.
You know, there's these little black details that culturally we know, mm-hmm. you know, and so that having Ava do this movie was it I had that beautiful feeling of like, Schweppes, yes. Like this yes. is, all of this is familiar. All those details.
If know? I, if, and I could be missing it, but I think that when Niecy Nash's character coughs, you've already got a sense that there is something wrong.
Right. Yes.
Right. But what I picked up the second time around is that the hints are a little bit there because she's kind of like on point, strong, you know, cousin in the beginning, but then slowly and surely, like she's at the pharmacy, you know, getting a prescription. And then at the cookout, unexplained, now she's walking with a cane.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, and it's just that slow deterioration that you're seeing, you know, like if you only focus on the face, she's fine.
Yep.
But then you just look a little bit outside and you're like, something's happening.
Yep. And then when she coughs, she puts the oxygen. You're like, wait a minute.
Right. Yeah. Right.
How did we get here?
And Anjanue Ellis and Niecy Nash are so good together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just are enjoying them talking to each other.
Yeah. Right. Right. So, and you're figuring, like, you know, you've seen aspects of this movie before. Mm-hmm. When Niecy Nash is, you know, cradling her in the bed.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yes.
You know, she's like, don't leave, don't leave. Like, you're figuring, all right, this is going to be the strong one for you for
right.
this movie.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh.
Right. Certainly, you're not going to take the cousin, too.
Yeah. Right.
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 Right. You know? But that's real. Now, I'm curious, how do you think that connected with, well, first of all, because if I understand, that's not in the book.
No.
None of that. All of that. I mean, it's real.
She doesn't go into as much detail about what's going on in behind the scenes.
Right. Her life.
We don't learn about her life in the book.
Right.
It is strictly pretty much what she sees and learns as she's doing this research.
So how do you feel the connection was made between the book and the what the book is about and her life?
So just from the little bit of reading that I've done, Ava sat down with her.
Yes.
And, you know, tell me what happened. Right. Yeah. And so the creative genius of making that the thread is Ava's gift. Yes. You know, I think that's her gift to us is making this palatable and making this so relatable that you can't look away. Mm-hmm. So she is kind of her, right? In this anthropology space where she is unearthing things that, how do you do the things you do, right? Nobody really knows what happens to you when you go home, right? But all those things build up to make you guys what you are.
Right.
And so that was so, you know, very smart of Ava to ask these questions. And then you put a beautiful actress who has this experience to come and bring it to life. So I think that research prior to writing or as she was writing the script was just gold.
Yeah. I love the way she integrated
what
was going on behind the scenes and the actual story. Mm-hmm. Does it mirror the book exactly? No, the book is how many pages? I forget.
It's like 400 or 500
pages. Yes.
It's a big book.
It was 20 some hours to listen to on Audible.
Yeah.
So there's only so much of that you can put in a film.
Yeah.
And she can do long films well.
Right.
She can. But I think she integrated the story really well. I felt like I understood why she and how she saw those connections. And I also understood her developing relationship with all these folks and her connection to them, to their joy and their pain. You know, when she was in India, I was just blown away by her connections. Even looking at the story of this young scholar who talked about MLK.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? But my biggest takeaway, if I could, because I don't want to forget this, is the Untouchables and the scene.
Dallas.
Yes, with him having to be in the crap and then being touched by somebody with oil.
Yeah, the touchings, that as he's greasing him down with mustard oil, I would imagine. Just seeing the touch and how he was responding. Like, he puts his head back at some point.
Yes.
And how he's responding to being touched as he is in an untouchable. That was just
powerful stuff.
Powerful, yeah.
I think it's a good introduction to the book. I think it's, you know, the book is so dense and has so much. And you know, like you said, there's no way, like there's no way you can transfer the book into a movie. Like frankly, you would have had to have done a mini series to cover, because she goes into so much detail with the caste system in the book. Like, she has this wonderful story where Isabel Wilkerson has developed this relationship now, and she becomes a scholar who speaks on caste, and she goes to a conference in India with a bunch of Indian scholars who, you know, just by definition, we reject caste. But Wilkerson says just because of the way they all move, like, she can tell who defers to whom, that she can tell who's in what caste, or rather who was born in what, like, even if you've rejected it,
right,
you, this is just in your bones. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, goes to so much detail about that. They, you know, they touch on it in the book. It's my favorite. It's my favorite thing that I pull from caste that I talk about every chance I get, where she talks about the Nazis coming to America.
Learning the
mechanics of racism from Americans. But they kind of allude to it. But there are two things that the Nazis said. Yeah, y'all too wild in America for us. Like, I forgot what, you know, it's like, so mulatto, which is a word we don't use, but it's biracial. Quadroon. Mm-hmm. Is somebody who was 1/4 black. Mm-hmm. Octoroon is 1/8 black.
Right.
But apparently there are terms that go all the way to 1/64th.
Really?
Black. Wow. And the Nazis said, yeah, that's too crazy for us.
Y'all gone too far.
Like, you,
yeah, y'all gone too far.
That's too crazy. And we're Nazis.
Right. Yes.
The second thing, and they kind of showed it in there where they had the picnic around the lynching, and they were taking pictures. The Nazis said, we want to exterminate the people that we hate too, but this whole public thing that y'all do, that's where you have a party, that's wild.
Yeah, they reject.
We're not doing that.
In the book.
And we're Nazis.
Right.
So it's that kind of level of detail. And she, you know, she talks about those two wonderful anthropologists, the two black anthropologists.
Oh, yeah.
What they deal with. So, you know, obviously in a book, you get so much more detail. Yeah. But, you know, frankly, if you had to make a movie, much like you all, I really like the decision to fold Isabel Wilkerson's life into, because, like I said, I just wanted to know, like I thought it was such a celebration of her and an acknowledgement of her. So, but so, you got to read the book.
Yeah.
So then why do you think that this film, which famously to you're talking about the book, a lot of studios, they passed on it for Ava DuVernay. She basically had to go to grants and use even some of her own money to get it made, which allowed her the full control that she would want anyway to make the movie that she wanted and get it out there. Why do you think that the movie, as great as it was, did not get the eyeballs that it deserved?
I think people are emotionally fatigued. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes back to what I was talking about earlier. I think if you are not of color or of a other, right? Mm-hmm. I think you have a choice, right? You have a choice whether you can help participate or engage in the conversation or not. You know, I hear people say, Denise, I'm just tired. I need to take a break from this. And I say, okay, take a break and come back. I cannot take a break. Yeah. Right? And so I think people are emotionally fatigued. Maybe she didn't have, you know, I know she raised, what, like $35 million? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not a budget that's going to push like other films. But I think the emotional fatigue of it all. And if you read the book, like me, I was thinking it was going to be more of a documentary and not
be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Something you're going to go to the movie to
exactly
see. Right.
I think it's the kind of movie that doesn't necessarily get the viewership, doesn't get the people in the seats the way some others do, because it is so heavy, or they anticipate that it'll be heavy. I don't think it was as heavy as I thought it would be because it wove her life into it.
Yeah, but it ain't light.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I actually thought I actually disagree with you. Like, I think it was very heavy. Like, I'm not, you know, I don't very lightly use a term like trigger warning, but I do think, much like you all, you know, frankly, I was blindsided by the Trayvon Martin snippet at the beginning.
Right.
Like, I was not prepared at all. And then, you know, maybe, you know, you hate to bring your own biography, you know, because I have an 8-year-old son.
Yeah.
Like, the final part with Al Bright and the way, you know, that dehumanizing moment with this little boy.
Yeah.
Like, it's a hard film.
Yeah.
And I don't think...
And that's a closing story.
Right. Like, I don't, you know, I think people can probably tell by our conversations that we're all admirers of the craft in this film. Mm-hmm. We are admirers of the story that is being told. Mm-hmm. But, you know, much like you said, you've had conversations with people. We've talked about this through the years. You know, frankly, I grant Black people the space to say, I deal with so much every day that for my own mental, you know, health, there are some things I'm just not going to engage. And I think that that was a decision that a lot of people made with this film.
Yeah.
That I just, you know, I just can't deal with this, with everything else that's going on. And, you know, quite honestly, I can respect that because this is a hard film.
Yeah,
I hear you. And I do believe people need to take care of themselves. I think we also need to not close our eyes to opportunities to see whatever our realities are from various perspectives, especially if it can be helpful. Now, does that mean I think everybody should have run out and seen Cast? No, I mean, Origin? No. I'm not saying that at all. But I struggle with what's happening when people get tired, then they don't necessarily go out and vote.
Sure.
And then you wind up with somebody who puts folks on the Supreme Court who overturn things that protect us. So I know it's kind of a leap,
but
to me, this was not as painful for me as reading the book.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I had the exact opposite. That's why there are four of us up here talking.
Right. Now, the film was painful. And I cried a lot because it was condensed.
Right.
But in the book, it was very painful to see that this is so obvious.
Yeah.
And we still, no matter how much we show, it's still not enough.
Yeah.
For folks to say, okay, let's pivot.
But that's the reason why, despite agreeing with you about people's self-care for themselves, I would say that I do want people to go out and see this film. Because I think that, I think the idea that it contextualizes about race and looking at it from a caste system and breaking it down more historically and globally, I think that is a lesson that people need to experience, because let's keep it real, more people are more likely to see the movie than read the book.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Yes.
So, and I think that there is, while it's a good introduction into the book, I think there's enough of the book to at least get you just thinking, looking at things a little differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And I love the idea at the end, talking about the weaving of her life, and it's... at the end with the sale of her mother's house and talking about how there's, you know, we all live in this house that has some structure, but, you know.
Yeah, I didn't build it, but it's mine to take care of now.
I take care of.
I didn't have slaves, but racism still exists. I got to do something.
Exactly. Yeah. And I loved that. And then her walking out the house and see, I think moments like that are what we need.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I don't mean just every Black person. I mean, everyone, every white people, it doesn't matter. Everyone needs to, I think, needs this movie, because I think the conversation is one that we all collectively need to have.
Look, sometimes you got to take strong medicine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. But with that being said, the question we now have arrived to is, would you recommend that people see?
Would I?
Origin. Yes.
Absolutely. I called so many people when I left that theater. I thought it was also smart. She did, what was it called? Seat 16 or 16 seat or something where you could buy somebody a ticket. Absolutely.
And then they showed the thing at the end where she talked about the film.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you see the version that where she gives like her thoughts, the film?
No, I didn't see that version.
Okay. So I went, when I went with Denise, she talked before the film, kind of like Scorsese in Flower Moon. And then she talked after.
Okay.
And so she talked after. It was almost like she was taking a few questions. But I love that she had set up that seat 16 or whatever it's called so you could gift it to people. Mm-hmm. I called my parents who, you know, they're born in 48 and 49, right? 74 and 75. So I just wanted everybody to see. I wanted to be in discussion about this. But not only because it was well done, technically, the filming, like I love, we haven't even touched on the transitions, how she did the transitions in the library and the photo from, I mean, there are so many beautiful filmmaking techniques, but the content of it, the storyline of it, I wanted everybody to see it so we can have these conversations, which is like, I get that you're emotionally fatigued, but you can't look away. Right. And I know there's some black people that are like, Denise, I can't watch any more of these videos of our black men getting shot. And I'm like, well, who will?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Who will watch? Yeah. Who will tell the story if not us? I understand you're fatigued and you can't see everyone maybe, but don't turn a blind eye to this. Don't turn a blind eye to Haiti. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. So, you know, it's not in the news cycle anymore. Yeah. Right. But it's happening.
Yeah.
Just right.
A blind eye journalistically was turned Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I wanted people to be in these conversations. I wanted people to see this film. I want people to still see this film so that these, I want it to show in schools, you know, like I feel like this is one of those films that are conversation starters and will take you through a cup of coffee or a cup of tea.
Yes.
Right. And that you should be having with your friends.
Indeed.
Yeah. I agree with the schools thing as long as there's some good leadership in the conversation because in these schools, they're learning how to deal with active shooter. So if you're going to learn how to deal with active shooter, which is a traumatic thing to think about, let's learn some history. And perhaps because this delivers the message of you have an option to do something with this, like you're talking about, you know, were you there to build the house? No, but you live in it and you're responsible for it. So I agree. I think it would be good for older children to see.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, look, it's an important film. It's an important film. It is a film that is necessary. But even just within the context of our usual conversations, at this point, I think it is fair to say Ava DuVernay is a master filmmaker.
Yes, absolutely. Ooh.
So just from the level of... I enjoy film. I enjoy black film. I enjoy watching the product of someone who has mastered their craft. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to watch Ava DuVernay films. And this is not, you know, this is yet another example of one you have to watch. Ingenue Ellis
stunning.
You know, she's gotten to the point now where it's almost, you know, I always talk about Stevie Wonder in the 70s, where you just sort of took him for granted after a while.
Right.
Like, she's just amazing in every single solitary thing she does. Yeah. And she has the singular performance in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's almost in every frame of the film. And she, you know, it's amazing. Yeah. So just on that level, I think you have to watch this film. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I want to call out Emily Yancey, who plays her mother.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This film.
Yeah.
She does some amazing, amazing work. I know we talked about Leslie Uggams in American Fiction.
Yeah, how about that?
This is another woman who hasn't really gotten her flowers as an actress, but...
Audra McDonald.
Oh, just one little spot. Oh, that story...
And Blair Underwood has on this weird bow tie that somehow, because he's Blair Underwood,
it hurts.
He pulls it off.
Why does he still look good at this age?
He's like, a vampire.
So there you go, Blair Underwood in a tuxedo.
Yeah, you can.
Vampire.
Yeah.
We all know this.
Yeah. So
he was a pushy editor too. It was like, it takes too long. I'm like, wait a minute, Blair.
But that's what a good editor does.
You know, I'm a bow tie, so we're gonna let him have it.
Right. Oh, because he was wearing a bow tie. Okay. All right. Do you own a bow tie?
I own a bow tie. Yeah.
A tied one already, but you tie, or you tie it yourself?
I tie it myself.
What okay.
Okay, easy.
He put the uncle voice on. All right, uncle.
No. I follow the James Bond rule of bow ties. Rule one, get a bow tie. Rule two, get a beautiful woman to tie the bow tie
there
for you.
Go.
So I just put it on and go and stand in front of like, it's honey. I don't tie it myself.
But you put it around your
But
neck
I put it around. Right.
Very smart.
Okay. Right. Yes, indeed.
Well, that is our review of Origin, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed that. And I hope you have enjoyed taking time, spending time on the mission with the Denises.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
It's a pleasure. It's my pleasure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If any of our fans would like to get in touch or see more of your works and just talk to you, how can they get in touch with
I am most often on Instagram.
On Instagram?
Yeah. And I'm Danese. So I'm the Denise.
Denise.
Yeah.
Most of mine is just looking at my students' work at this point. Something called PhiladelphiaNeighborhoods.com.
There you go.
You can see some of their work. So, yes, I got to get my personal game up. I look at Instagram. I look at TikTok for hours.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. I waste so much time.
But I don't post as much as I probably should.
Okay. Yeah.
Really? I look at her stuff.
I'm Michelle Mission. That's what we do. All right, ladies and gentlemen. So that is it. Before we tell you what we're going to be reviewing next week, I invite you to like and follow the Michelle Mission on all the social media of your choice at Michelle Mission, that whether it be Instagram, the social media formerly known as Twitter, or Facebook at Michelle Mission. If you're watching us on YouTube, and I know you are, you can find us on YouTube at Michelle Mission. Hit subscribe, ring the bell so you're notified when all of our videos goes up, all of our shorts, all of the edited videos and top fives, all the crazy minutia that we put up there on our channel. You can always email the Michelle Mission. Let us know what's on your mind at michellemission@gmail.com. The Michelle Mission is a proud member of The Podglomerate, thepodglomerate.com. They make podcasts work, such as ours, which films every Tuesday night here live from Yunk Junk, Philadelphia's premier video podcast palace here in Manayunk. And if you want to have your podcast shot in one of the amazing studios that they have here, you can't have this one. This one is branded Michelle Mission. But there are other studios here. And if you want to have your podcast here, then all you have to do is contact our man, Dylan, dylan@yunkjunk.com. That's D-Y-L-A-N at yunkjunk.com. Hurry up, because Denise has already put him on the Rolodex. And she's like, Dylan, look, I don't want to holler at you. And what's your rate, bruh?
I need to see a reel.
So make it happen, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Next week, we are going to be, it's going to be April.
It is going to be April.
Yeah. It's going to be April, which means
fast.
That is Octavia April. That's here, right. As we celebrate everything science fiction in memory of the late great mother of Afrofuturism, Octavia Butler.
Yes.
And we are starting off things really fine with a film that was another slept on film from 2023, I would say. The Creator.
Mm-hmm.
We starred one John David Washington.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Looking forward to that because have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
Me either. And I meant to see it. So I'm glad that we're doing it next week.
Yeah. Next week here on the Michelle Mission. Do not turn that dial. All right. All right. Until then, he's Vincent. I'm Len. And in parting, we say.
We'll see you when it's time to meet again.
The Michelle Mission is produced by Len Webb and Vincent Williams, with co-production by Mo Poplar. Check out Mo's family travel podcast, Bun Amigos, at ashyfeet.com.
Original music is provided by Alexa Gold. Visit Alexa Gold Music at Bandcamp for more of her melodies. The Michelle Mission is edited by Len Webb and produced for YouTube at YunkJunk. Visit Dylan at YunkJunk.com for more information.